In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swan hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 130. And we have a lot to talk about. We're going to give our predictions, at least for the first round of the MLB playoffs. A little bit of a wrap up on the Yankees and Red Sox. And we'll talk about who stays and who goes and what happens. And we have to give a little nod to two elements here, too. Obviously, to Tim Wakefield, who passed away, and that whole saga. As well, some pretty big name players are leaving the game, at least on the field, for good. Let's start with the playoffs, John. I mean, both of us, I mean, we chat, you, me, and Matt Saroy's our producer, about this. I mean, for the Astros to have gone to maybe not making it to...
In a course of like a day and a half.
To winning the division, it was super disappointing. I mean,
seriously, the one thing we talked about that we didn't want to see happen.
Happened.
Right? You knew they're going to figure out a way to squeak in, right? Because they're good. They're just a
good... And their manager's good.
They're a good team, right? And they're proven. But to go from having to slug it out, possibly, you know, to make it to the next round, now they're going to sit back for 5 days and relax and wait for the next team to come along.
Sucks so
drives
bad.
Me nuts. It drives me absolutely
nuts. Well, more than just that, I feel like Seattle... The fan base is great. The stadium's great. The team is really fun and young. And I just felt like, I just feel bad for them.
It's amazing that nobody stepped up over the course of like six games and gave the Astros any sort of challenge. It was like they couldn't score more than any runs.
Maybe it's because they're just so inexperienced. They don't know how to win. They don't have... Well, maybe that's what they do in the offseason is come up with a couple of veterans that can maybe... Imagine you put Justin Turner in that clubhouse or something.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm not saying they should do that because if he stays playing, he should stay with the Red Sox. But I just feel like that's probably what's missing there.
And that's what makes Houston so scary, to be honest with you. That's what makes them scary.
Nothing's going to faze them.
Right. Nothing fazes them. They've been there. They've done that. And that, you know, other than the Dodgers, I mean, some can say the Braves, but I would say other than the Dodgers in this postseason, that's who you're looking at as far
as experience. Is it true in the wild card round that the home team has all three games? Is that true?
I don't know. I think so. It has to be, right? Because what would you do? You'd all of a sudden play two games.
You can't
two
go
games
one,
in
one,
one. No,
so
I don't think so.
I think all three games are at the home team. So
yeah.
You have to win all on the road.
Like Texas is going to have to win three games in Tampa.
Right. So let's start there. I personally am not a... Listen, you know, we have a conflicted relationship with the state of Texas, but I really don't like the Rays.
And you have a conflicted relationship with the state of Texas? Or like us in general?
No, my wife does specifically.
Oh.
but anyway.
This just took a dramatic turn.
I always have a good time there, but anyway.
I've never been to Texas other than I flew through Dallas-Fort Worth. That's it.
I had to drive once from... I couldn't get my flight out after a hurricane in New Orleans, so I flew to Houston.
Yeah.
I mean, I drove to Houston, excuse me. And I've been to a bunch of different places in Texas for work stories. And I've had a good time there. It's just a different place. But anyway, I want the Rangers to win. I just don't want... I want the Rays to go away as a franchise.
Yeah.
So I don't want them to win it. They won 99 games and I'm like, I could care less. And they're going to get a new stadium and I could care less. They should be in like Nashville or something.
Right.
So by that alone, I'm picking the Rangers and they got to win three on the road, which they're not going to do.
Yeah. Even though that the Rangers opening starter is Jordan Montgomery.
They have to win two in the row.
Former Yankee, of course. That they're not going to beat Tampa. The Rangers aren't. I mean, especially the way they limped into the postseason, and Tampa, they're playing in Tampa, which, you know, some will say is not an easy place to play. I mean,
right.
and also Tampa has the postseason experience, let's be honest. And
they're like a mini Houston.
Yeah. And they just figure out a way, you know, if they get you to even to four innings, if they can get four innings out of their starter, most likely five, they pound you with a bullpen of a bunch of guys that, like, you know, again, nobody's really ever heard of. I mean, Fairbanks has been there for a while, but it's like, one injury after another comes along, one scandal after another comes along, and they just roll with it.
Right. So you're picking the Rays. I'm picking the Rangers on sentimentality, but you're probably going to be right there. Blue Jays are at the Twins. Again, all three games in Minnesota, although that's not a bad drive between the two places necessarily. I mean, you could probably make that drive. The Blue Jays, they seem to just... They're just not great. They're just good. And I don't know what that means against the Twins, because the Twins are just average. I mean, these are two potentially, I don't know if they're two weakest teams in the playoffs on the American League side, but I mean, the Blue Jays have some hitting talent. I don't know about their pitching, and but the Twins were 500 until like 2 months ago.
Yeah, I don't see the Twins matching up, obviously, hitting-wise against the Blue Jays. What the Twins do have going for them is Sonny Gray and Pablo Lopez. They have two great starters, but the Jays have two great starters with Gausman starting game one. This one's tough because I think it comes down to if Lopez and Sonny Gray are on, even though they're not going with Sonny Gray, who's probably going to be the runner-up to the Cy Young in game one. I still think the Blue Jays are going to come out on top. I think pitching wise and hitting wise, I think that, you know, they'll match up close enough with the pitching that the hitting will put them over the edge and they'll advance.
I feel bad for the Blue Jays because it seems like every year we're picking them to finally get over the hump and they're not. I'm picking the Twins just on, again, you're going on data, I'm going on sentiment. You know, I just feel like baseball's good when the Twins are good and the stadium's full. And I mean, I want the Twins to go a little further. I think they have zero chance. I mean, when I really think about the Twins, Blue Jays, Rays, and Rangers, and compare them to, I don't know, Houston, I just even Baltimore, I think is just superior to these four teams. So I'm gonna go against you on that one too. Let's switch over to the NL. And again, like I feel like the Diamondbacks showed something because they played so crappy in the first half of September.
They lost and they won.
Right, and
it's
so
it's like weird watching that, right?
But they did, but they managed to figure it out,
right?
And whether it's Lavulo, the manager, or whomever, I really respect the fact that they didn't just fade away. And whereas the Brewers, you know, they listen. Cincinnati was in the lead like 5 weeks ago, and they just went on. They just won, and so I think the Brewers win this because I think the Diamondbacks are out of gas and just not good enough. And I think the Brewers, again, they're probably just good enough to advance and not good enough to get to the World Series, but I'm picking the Brewers.
I think this matchup looks probably to be the most similar of the two teams. Like you said, the Brewers were in first place and then they were out. Diamondbacks have kind of been doing that too with the wild card all year. They've been like, I don't know if I want to be in it. I don't know if I want to be out of it.
Right.
And then they finally get in.
Well, they went first place early in the year before the Dodgers got their act together.
Right. But they've been bouncing on the edge of that wild card basically the whole season.
Right.
That being said, you are going to see Zach Gallen once guaranteed. He won't be starting game one. But the Brewers are going to be without Brandon Woodruff. So they're going to have to go with Peralta and Burns, which is not bad at all to win. I like the Diamondbacks' energy. I like the youngness of the team. I like, you know, when you can rally around a guy who's going to probably win the Rookie of the Year.
Carroll.
Yeah. Even though Senga had an amazing season for the Mets, you can argue all that you want with the Japanese players as far as being a rookie. This one I think is really hard to call. I'm gonna go with the Brewers just because they have that little bit of extra postseason experience and two good starters still, and I think they'll find a way. I think this one's gonna be a lot closer. I see this one possibly being the one out of the two that we've talked to that will go three games.
And then we got Marlins, Phillies, and obviously Miami just sort of.
Talk about a bunch of no names, right?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't name three players in that team. The reason they're national news is their GM is a female, and it's a big deal, a piece of history. Kim Ng, right? And that's
former
a big
Yankee
deal.
And
the Phillies. Listen, I just sort of Dombrowski, even though he was both exciting and unnerving in Boston, I like his swashbuckler ways. I like Bryce Harper, even though he doesn't. He's grown up in a way that I like. He's pure competition. He's not he was a bit of a jerk. Yeah. He might still be a bit of a jerk, but he was a real jerk as a kid.
Yeah.
But he's not a kid anymore. Yeah.
I don't think any people really understood him, like, until you actually saw how he was. You know, that's just how he is. I mean, he is this super religious player who will go and chew out an umpire in front of 45,000 fans and whip his helmet in the stands, right? Yeah. I mean...
Right.
That's pretty much all you got to say about the guy. But he's an awesome family guy. He doesn't drink. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't tell dirty jokes. Right? He's a great guy. But when he gets on that field, he's a devil.
He's a lunatic.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's what you want in a player, and that's why teams like that win, because they have a Bryce Harper. They got the Shohei Ohtani. They got the although I don't see Shohei Ohtani doing that. I see him more bowing to an umpire.
Right.
But you know what I mean.
Bryce Harper is a baseball
player.
Yeah, he is. So you're taking Philly too?
I don't think Philly should even be in this category. If they're in any other division,
they're in first place.
They're sitting there 5 days waiting, right,
yeah,
to play a team. They are the most dangerous team other than the Braves, I think, in the National League.
They're 49-32 at home. That's a really good home.
Yeah, and
record.
That's just under, like, I think Tampa Bay had like 57 wins or something like that, or 56 maybe, something like that.
In terms of home wins, I can give that right away. Home, I mean, listen, Baltimore was the same record.
I think the Dodgers were the only ones that were better at home.
Atlanta was better.
And, yeah.
And Milwaukee was the same. And so just they're the third best home record of baseball. So there you have that. And
they got an excellent bullpen. They got the Bryce Harper factor. They got a lot of guys that are just flat out playing. You got Turner, Castellanos. I mean, those guys, I mean, Turner's been unreal. He's probably, if he did what he did post standing ovation all season, you'd be talking about an MVP candidate right up there.
Yep. All right, so our picks are in there. Let's talk quickly about the Sox and the Yanks. I think that it doesn't – obviously, the Red Sox have to hire some front office, and I have no idea who that's going to be. A lot of people are saying Sam Fold. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know what will happen.
Probably all depends on what happens in Philly with the season, right? If they win and go all the way, Sam Fold might not be going anywhere if they don't win at all. Right.
Well, I wonder if they win it all. I don't think Philly's going to, but if they do, I do think Dombrowski was like fine not being like you've read the stories about they begged him to come to work for Philly. He didn't want to do it. And so if he wins a World Series, I could see him retiring and I can see them giving
Fold the job.
Everything to Fold.
Yeah.
Like giving him.
So why would you leave?
Exactly. I mean, even though he's a New Englander.
Yeah. You're close enough, though. I mean, come on. What better sports place to be than Philadelphia, New York?
Well, I can't stand the city, but Matt Soroy, our producer, hates Philly, but
passionate though.
He's a New Englander. He's from New Hampshire, or I think he's from New Hampshire.
Yeah,
yeah. And so I don't know what that would be, but if they do win it, I think Fold would stay in Philly because I think that Dombrowski would go and he'd get everything. If they don't win it, I think he's very much in play. It looks like Cora's going to stay. I mean, they're not two or three pieces away. They're four or five pieces. So, like, I just want them to be competitive, and I don't know what they can do. I mean, listen, if their pitching stays healthy, it's actually not terrible, but they have so many holes. I don't even know where to start. And then they're telling me that they're going to raise ticket prices single-digit percentages, and I think I'm going to give up my seats finally. My wife finally said, you know, we can StubHub opening day probably in our section, and then we'll just go when we want. And so we've had these tickets since, you know, it's been, I want to say, 18 years.
Wow.
And probably spent a college tuition. When I think, I'm a little bit cringed out at how much
I think
I've
how many
spent.
Other people are in the same position as you, or they gave up sooner, right? I mean, that's not, if you keep raising. Look what, I just read an article about the team Messi's playing for. Is it Inter Miami or whatever? The guy's season tickets went up from $6,000 to $56,000.
That's amazing.
Like, if you want to keep these seats, it'll be $56,000. He's like, what am I going to do? You're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go and spend an extra $50,000.
No
so
way.
So I can go watch Messi play, what, 12 games or whatever?
That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, so there's that, right?
All right, so I don't even want to get too much into the Red Sox until we have someone in place.
The Red Sox have got a ton of work to do because they don't have a head of operations, right? I mean, it all starts right there.
Sure.
I mean, at least right now the Yankees have Cashman in place, at least for now as we speak.
You have Casas, you assume Story at short.
Well, I'm just talking like
as far as front office. Baseball-wise, they need some bats in the outfield, and they're going to need obviously some pitching. But, you know, in terms of the Yankees, are you disappointed? It looks like Boone's staying.
Yeah, I have no problem with Boone being back. Okay. And I think most Yankee fans wouldn't have a problem because I don't think, you know, everyone's saying, like, you know, he doesn't construct the team. I mean, you can say what you want about Aaron Boone, but there's one thing, he supports his players. I think his players generally think that. I mean, he very passionate. You don't see many managers out there doing what he's doing.
He's so soft-spoken off the field.
And then he goes
and then
bit
he gets
nuts.
Kicked out more than everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, believe me, I loved the highlight of the season was him getting kicked out by Laz Diaz. I mean, that for me as a Yankee fan, it's pretty sad to say, it didn't come from hitting and fielding or something.
It came from a manager
getting kicked out. But I mean, he gets his money's worth, but I don't think it's his issue as far as like why the Yankees sucked so bad this year. A lot of it's obviously injuries and, you know, here and there, obviously. But I think he'll be back. It's interesting that he had a meeting with the front office, right? And he was talking with Hal and I guess Cashman, right? And the word is that Boone will be coming back. You would think that means Cashman's coming back too.
Well, but he's under
contract, right? Yeah, but there's, I mean, that doesn't mean nothing. You can always get rid of him.
Right.
But I would assume that it's going to be business as usual. And as you know, if the thing that Hal talked about, how they're going to do this deep dive into the organization, which seems like it's the flavor now for these owners to talk about, like the Padres, you know, when you come
up short. Let's do an internal audit.
Right. So, I mean, you know, I smell some patsies. You know, there'll be some analytic nerds will probably lose their job, and maybe some person that's been there for a while, like I always say, a Randy Levine or someone like
and
that.
And you're okay with that?
Well, I mean, what are honestly. You going to do if he's under contract? You know, maybe they're thinking.
You just said it didn't matter.
Let's let it play out.
Let's play out? Another
contract,
crappy season?
Two more years. Right, I've been saying all along I wanted Cashman gone because I want new blood in there. He's been there too long. But again, that comes with a whole clean over. Cashman has baggage.
Maybe you're just getting
a lot of baggage.
Maybe you're getting comfortable with mediocrity.
I'm not comfortable with mediocrity.
Maybe that's it. Maybe you're just okay with being two games over 500 or whatever.
Listen,
it was.
I turned off Carlos Rondon's debacle before he even gave up the 9 runs. I knew he was going to do it.
And what about Stanton? You think they can move him? They can't move him unless they eat the whole salary.
You're not going to move him without eating a ton of his money, and that's the issue, right? You're under contract with Stanton through 2027, all right? That's a long time if you're thinking about next year's 2024. That's through 2027. 4 more years, right, of him.
His age must be
the man. About just under 30 bills a year. So think about that. When you're looking at these numbers and how baseball calculates all the collective bargaining BS and the competitive balance tax and all that, these guys get up in these ranges where they're paying like Cohen dollars. You're basically paying 95% tax on every dollar you're spending.
It's crazy.
So if you got a player making $20 million a year, you're paying $18 million for that player extra. I mean, think about that. Now, you can talk all you want about these guys having all that money, but I'm sorry, but if I'm going to the grocery store and I'm buying milk for $5, I don't want to pay $10 for that milk.
So your point is that it might be worth eating his salary.
It might be worth eating his salary, but I think you could probably trade him and eat maybe
80%.
You're going to have to eat some of it. There's no way you're going to trade him.
It's an interesting point. If you trade him, say he's making 35. If you trade him and eat 30, you're actually saving like...
He's making like 28 a year over the next 4 years.
Let's just round it to 25.
Okay.
So he's making 25. You move him, you eat 20, but you're really saving 30. Because you're saving the $5 on a salary and the $25 on taxes.
Yeah, well, it also depends on where the Yankees sit overall in the taxes. There's brackets like it starts at like 211 or whatever, 187. I forget the exact number.
I thought like a year or two ago they were trying to get under the threshold.
They're like right at the first threshold. But like, you know, like the Mets, they're at the top threshold. You know, even with them shedding Scherzer and Verlander, they're still going to be up there because they ate a ton of that money. I guess the big thing I'm saying is it's going to be hard to do anything about Stanton unless you get someone that's going to eat almost half of his contract. And that's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah, I don't know if you can do it. And who would take him?
Well, you can't just release him because then you're on the hook for all of it, right?
And then he can sign for the league minimum with anybody.
And you're still paying for it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd rather...
We're going to be talking about this 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now. For all of these players are going to be in this position, and these teams are going to be sitting there. And if baseball,
you're talking about the back end of the big contracts.
Yeah. And if they don't wake up and start figuring out how to like rein in these salaries, everybody's going to be paying too much. And then, like you said, it's not going to be worth it to go to a game. How are you going to be able to afford to go to a game? Because they're going to figure out a way to make the money somehow.
Yeah, it's not enjoyable. And I talked about just between the beers at Fenway and the beers at Dodger Stadium. And you know what I've already started doing? I've already started, like, when I go to a game, we park at my mother and father-in-law's and we walk. So they live in Back Bay and it's like a 20-something minute walk.
Yeah.
And we just go down Newbury. I can stop at Shake Shack, pay the same amount of money, and eat better food.
Right.
So why would
I
go?
Not miss any of the game.
Why would I get a 4-hour-old sausage, you know, and limp fries?
You stood in line for 30 minutes.
And paid the same amount. So we've already changed our eating habits at Fenway. And, you know, I know a lot of people, but one of my funniest things ever, I was at an Irish pub before a Bruins game, and a woman was coming down the stairs and tripped. And she tripped, and out of her bra came like 4 nip bottles.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And like, that's her hack.
Yeah.
But I was like, I applaud. I mean, she took a pretty bad header. She was fine.
She needed the non-metal tip.
I was like, I don't love like hard alcohol. I like to drink beer at games. But the point, and I know you're not drinking, but like, that's a good hack.
Yeah.
Because why pay $18 for a rum and coke?
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, I got snagged when I was younger going into the former Riverside Amusement Park, which is now Six Flags New England. It was tiny. It was just that stupid white roller coaster and some other stuff.
Right, right.
We went to a concert there, and I think I was in college. We had drove up from New York, and we went to Siena. Drinking in the car, and we went to go in, and I was like, I'm just going to bring some beers in, and I like stuffed them down my pants, and I walked up, and the guy was like, with the wand, and he gets right down by my crotch, and and I'm like, ah, damn it. I had the metal top on the bottle. So, you know, I'm guessing that the lady with the nips probably didn't had plastic tops.
Yeah, all plastic. I remember taking backpacks of beers in to see Clerks in Manhattan back in the day. But anyway, we digress. John Senecal, Brian Shackman here. This is episode 130 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I want to take a serious turn for a second because I don't think you were the photog that was with me, but in 2003, I was sent by NBC Connecticut to Boston to wait for Game 7 to end. So assuming
the team would come back.
Like we had, like Kevin Nathan was in New York, I think, and I was in Boston. So if they won and came back, it was going to be a big deal. They won Game 7 and they were on to the World Series, and that would have been a big deal. And it turned out, you know, Aaron Boone hit the home run in extra innings on a first pitch from
Tim Wakefield.
And there's been a lot of talk since he passed away about a certain moments in his career, and you know, we've talked a lot. You know, came up in the Pittsburgh system, wasn't going to make it a position player, you know, switched to being a pitcher. When he got called up by the Pirates, he had an incredible first run, and then, you know, with knuckleballers, it's feast or famine, and he struggled. They released him and the Red Sox picked him up, and he pitched for 17 years in Boston. And listen, we went to almost all those 17 years and we loved him, and we just assumed every year, starting when he was like 35 or 36, he just signed that 1 year contract.
Yeah, he had the rolling 1 year deal.
Yeah, and it was just something that you sort of banked on. But going back to 2003, the stuff I read about this week, he was really worried about being looked at as a Bill Buckner type in the city. And he was really, I wouldn't say scared, because I don't think he got scared of very much, but he was nervous about it. And then they received him so well in 04, it just faded away. And obviously, he was a part of that 2004 team that was magical. And I forget if it was 18-7 or 17-8, but the game 3 where the Yankees just destroyed him at Fenway, I was at the game, and it was the worst sporting event I've ever been to.
I think it was 19-8 they beat him.
It was.
And then they choked it, right?
It was awful. But, you know, the one thing that was brought up, he went out there and ate a bunch of innings.
Yeah.
So that they could save pitching. And it always amazes me because nobody believed that they could win that series. But if you were ever going to put yourself in a position, he probably saved the arms of like three guys that night. And it was a little bit about like that Nate Eovaldi relief appearance from a couple years back. The same thing. Like the only people who really noticed it were the teammates.
Right.
And stuff like that. And then you saw the Tim Lynn video from when they won in 07, where he was left off the active roster, and Timlin came over to him and on camera and was like, I just want to tell this guy how proud I am of him because he didn't make a stink
about not being on the roster.
And he was here to support his teammates. And like it might have choked me up anyway.
Right.
Just because Timlin's a classy dude and Wakefield's a classy dude. But the fact that he's dead and he's 57, I don't know. It just really hit me in a different way. And so Wakefield, for me, it hurt a lot. Because he's so young and he was such a core part of that whole experience. You know, I think of Pedro, I think of Veritek, Wake, even Derek Lowe was probably not a very nice guy. But, you know, and that's the thing with the Schilling stuff. And I know I'm talking a lot, but I've never seen somebody who's ruined their image as much as he has. And like, it's clear, like, I always mistook Wakefield for kind of being a dick because he was so kind of quiet and he was very economical. He just didn't yuck it up with many people. And he clearly wanted to die in private.
Yeah, when we first actually heard about this, it was just a week ago, or a little over a week ago when Schilling had...
It turns out it did happen fast, but it also feels like it happened faster because we learned about it so late. And But what irks me is not the rapidity of it. It's just the fact that he didn't want anybody to know until he died.
Right.
He must have known he was going to die.
Yeah.
And to take that away from him feels kind of dirty. And I don't know that he has or hasn't, but Schilling should just be like...
Oh, Schilling's a piece of shit.
I know, but he could at least...
Well, it's interesting.
Apologize.
You talked about, how you remember Wakefield, and it's, as a Yankees fan, and most baseball fans in general that aren't Red Sox fans know Tim Wakefield as a knuckleballer, obviously, the Phil Negros, they're generational players, but they know him from giving up the game seven of 2003 ALCS. They don't recognize the fact that the guy went on to win 200 games.
It's incredible.
And how many players can say that in Major League Baseball, let alone play for 17 years, 19 years? For a guy that was basically told you're never going to play above Double A, it's amazing. It really is. It's amazing. And 57. For people that start to get up in age or middle age, you start to think, and it's like, wow, that guy's 8 years older than I am.
Yeah,
He's
5 years older than me.
His life was probably pretty goddamn normal 2 years ago, and next thing you know, he's dead. So it's scary when you look at it that way. But, to put it in baseball perspective, he's never going to be a Hall of Famer.
Right.
But it's the intangibles. It's the stuff that you talked about just now. It's the fact that he didn't wind up under a bridge after giving up that home run. He didn't drink his sorrows away. He got back up on a horse, and everybody around him saw that. And it made everybody around him better. I mean, look at Johnny Damon brought him the ALCS trophy in 2024 on camera and said, that's for you, after what happened in 2020.
Yeah, love that.
Just not 2024.
2004.
So, not many people can say that they played Major League Baseball, let alone excelled at it, and then had an impact on people. So, rest in peace to Tim Wakefield.
Yeah, it's tough. And there's also a fair amount of players who are gone. They're still with us, but they're not going to play anymore. Miguel Cabrera, obviously.
Being the biggest one, yeah.
And I was there for his final game at Fenway. It was really nice. Boston fans, say what you want.
What did they give him?
I don't know. They gave him something, but what they also did is that with no prompt, they gave him standing O, in his last at-bat, with no prompt.
Yeah.
It didn't go on the screen his final at-bat at Fenway Park or anything
That wouldn't happen in Oakland, where they gave him an $80 bottle of wine.
Right.
When you know you're in a baseball city, that's going to happen in St. Louis.
Yeah.
That would happen in New York. It's going to happen in Philly, Chicago. You know where you are, right? And you respect the player. And, they're not given the 20 seconds, get in the box, or,
they let him tip his cap. The whole thing was just great. And I really appreciated it. And then you have Joey Votto, Zach Greinke, Adam Wainwright, I really like him too, but the goodbye stuff went on forever in St. Louis. They let him play a concert. They gave him a dog.
It was a little much.
And then Terry Francona, this last week, someone stole a scooter. It's just the worst.
He's like, yeah, someone stole my scooter again.
it's brutal. And it's funny because I have a connection to Francona because, he won the two World Series. But the Votto one, I think, hurts the most, and I know you like him too. It's just the way he interacted with fans and the way he approached the game.
He got thrown out for his final game too.
Did he really?
Perfect Joey Votto
fashion. Did he do it on purpose?
No, he didn't even get to play. He got thrown out barking from the bench.
Before the game?
I think it was before his at-bat.
Was he DHing?
I think so, when he got thrown out. Or if he was going to come in and play. I mean, he only played 60 games this year.
Right.
I mean, he was hurt towards the beginning of the season. But when you look at a player like Joey Votto, I mean, obviously Miguel Cabrera is going to the Hall of Fame. He's the last person to win the Triple Crown, two-time MVP. I mean, the guy balled. He's going his first ballot Hall of Famer. Then you look at a player like Joey Votto, and you're like, wow, this guy played for 20 seasons. He's got some great numbers. He's got, over 400 on-base percentage, over 300, or in the 290s career average, 1,200 RBIs, but he's not got Hall of Fame numbers, which is, they're borderline numbers. So he's going to be one of those guys. Does he get in because he's Joey Votto?
Well, he's super well-liked, right?
Exactly, like a Larry Walker kind of guy. I'm not to say that they're going to, I don't know their stats right off the top of the head. That's just the first person.
So, Votto's got 2,000 hits. He's got 350 home runs, 1,000 RBI, which is very pedestrian in the modern era. I mean, the 2,000 hits is significant. He's got a career. It's too bad the last three, four seasons, because he's got a career average of .294.
Yeah.
And, you know, 10 years ago, he was raking in the 300s just about every season. But, you know,
and that's the risk that these guys take as they right. as they continue to play. You know, they're like Jeter saw that his numbers didn't drop a ton, but they started dropping off. And that, you know, next thing you know, your average is slipping below the 300 line. Yeah. Not to say Jeter wouldn't have been in the Hall of Fame anyways.
No, but it was
that's
really
a big deal to players. Yeah. You know, I'm batted 300 in the major leagues.
Well, he batted 202 this year, 205 the season before, and 266, then 226 before. So, you know, he hit himself under the 300 line. So I would say based on pure numbers alone, He's not a Hall of Famer, but man, was he fun! And he ushered in the sort of video camera era, in my opinion. Like all the things he did by the backstop and with kids,
yeah.
Like I loved watching those videos of him.
Very interesting dude.
Ah.
Dealt with anxiety issues when he was younger, kind of like Zach Greinke. Didn't almost folded up the tent. And just went on to be an awesome baseball player, a really good baseball player.
And great sort of, I guess my point is, like, great ambassador for the game. Like, who's doing that? And I, you know, he's the kind of guy that plays catch with the guy in the stands or whatever. And so
he's great for baseball. He is. And, you know, like, again, does being Joey Votto be enough? I don't think so. I don't think his numbers will be there. But, you know, it's interesting if you look at players now, like, say, like Kyle Schwarber, right? What if that guy hits 550 home runs, but his career batting average is 197, yeah, right? So,
I mean, that was an incredible season. To have that many home runs and over 100 RBI and bat under 200 is crazy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is a whole other episode. We'll talk about it at the end of the season. I mean, you look just across Major League Baseball, some of these numbers that were put up this year are insane by the players and the organizations from Atlanta right down the line. It's just amazing. But it's been exciting. It's only going to get better.
All right, so we'll check in next week. I mean, I think that we'll be on to the next round, and we'll have predictions for that moving forward. You've been listening to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.